When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
What's up, you guys? Sean Ross Sapp, Fightful, here with a name you know. We heard from him just a few weeks ago ahead of the first episode. Now we are just ahead of the finale of Who Killed WCW Vice Tuesday night. We got Evan Husney. How you doing, man?
Good, man. Thanks so much for having me back. Really excited to be here.
I was very excited to have you back. We're going to talk about the series, how things have unfolded, some of the reactions to it. How are you feeling as we head into the final episode? I got an early look at it. It is fantastic, as the previous three have been as well.
Oh, wow. Thank you, man. That means a lot. Thank you so much. It's kind of surreal. I mean, it was something I might have mentioned this last time we spoke. This idea came together very fast. I think we started shooting it late November, early December of last year. It was a quick shoot. But I'm so happy it came back. You know, it came together. So many hardworking, talented people that are on our team that made this thing possible in such a short amount of time. I mean, just so many talented people that we have the privilege to work with. So just very, very, very happy that the response seems to be mostly positive. Obviously, you know, you can't fit everything you want into 4 hours. And I might even say, if I could go back in a time machine and repitch the show, I think maybe 6 hours. I think we easily could have done 6 hours on this thing or more. Who knows? But I think 6 hours would have allowed us to get into a little bit more in depth. And who knows, maybe it allowed us the opportunity to get some more voices in the show too, which would have been great.
Yeah, I think it's a topic that a lot of people were like, well, why is this being covered again? And then as you watch it, you go, well, it's never quite been covered in this manner and with some of these voices that are featured on it. So, like, I look at it and I go, okay, you've got Guy Evans involved. I loved his Nitro book. Are there any criticisms that you have seen of it that you're like, well, I agree with that, or maybe you don't agree with?
Good question. Well, there definitely was a lot of skepticism, I think, from the fan base or the wrestling, internet wrestling circle going into this, and rightfully so. I mean, this is a subject that has been discussed, you know, a lot in the past. I think the Rock and Seven Bucks involvement created some more skepticism, where people were like, is this a WWE, you know, project where it's going to have another, you know, WWE perspective on it? And, you know, like I said, this came together last year. So this was before I even knew or anybody knew that The Rock was going to, you know, be a part of the board of TKO. So no, the whole idea of going into this project was that we wanted to, you know, sort of off the heels of Guy's book, really tell this story from the WCW perspective, to get a fresh take on this. You know, this isn't the story of WWE killing WCW. It's the story of all the you know, elements from within that sort of took down this company. And that was kind of what we wanted to examine. Trying to think, I mean, obviously, you know, you see some of the, for lack of a better term, dirt sheet response to the show. And sure. I think, you know, there is a lot of dissecting of fact or fiction, and, you know, it's very hard with a story like this, you know, 25 years later, to pick apart the facts and everything. But I think the emotions are true, still, of everything that went down. I mean, when you look at episode 2, in terms of, you know, Eric Bischoff's exit, and you look at the Bret Hart Bill Goldberg fiasco, and you look at everything that happened in episode 3. I think a lot of the things that went down, you know, there's varying degrees of opinions, and everybody has their take. But, you know, we tried to represent them as best we could.
And especially when you're dealing with wrestlers, and I mean, I tell people all the time, especially on my staff, workers will try to work you. Even in a flat out, in a documentary setting where it's supposed to be just transparent and straightforward, some will try to further their agendas. But one of the criticisms I saw that I didn't agree with, okay, somebody said, oh, I think it's very kind to Eric Bischoff. And I was like, well, listen.
Oh, yeah.
And I respected the person that said that, but I'm like, listen, I know Eric a little bit. And specifically when it comes to truth telling and what he perceives as his experience, he is not afraid to be combative about anything.
Yeah.
And I felt like he was very humble and accepting of his shortcomings as it relates to this, but also confident in the things that he did well. He was very quick to admit he was not a finish guy. Like that was abundantly clear through here. The table could be set, but the finish wasn't always there. And I thought he accepted that really well.
Yeah, I think he was pretty honest in this interview. And, you know, I've interviewed Eric a lot over the years. You know, this interview to me felt very forthright in terms of, you know, there's a lot of him in this show throughout all four episodes where, you know, he admits to, I think this is the first time I've ever heard where he's actually admitted finally once and for all that he led the audience to believe that Kevin Nash and Scott Hall were, you know, invading from the WWF. I think I've always kind of heard him evade that question over the years, obviously, because there was legal matters surrounding that. But
of course,
but also, like, you know, he does take responsibility for a lot of the ideas that didn't work. I mean, you know, I go back to episode 3 where they're talking about the David Arquette title win. I mean, he's like, you know, I was a part of it, you know, for Christ's sake, you know, I you know, was behind the idea. I okayed it, and hell, I even participated in it, you know? So I think, you know, hearing him talk about that and the chronic bad finish disease, you know, yeah. I mean, and again, I always go back to this too. It's so easy 25 years later to say, okay, here's where everything went wrong. And here's the decisions that, you know, we should have made with the benefit of hindsight. Again, I go back to, you know, AEW has been around for what, 5 years now, right?
Yeah.
That feels like not a lot of time, but you know, 1997 to 1999, it's like less than 2 years. I mean, just think about that. You know, it's such a brief amount of time where so many critical decisions had to be made so correctly, and things are just moving at the speed of light. And especially when you're producing that much television, I mean, I'm guilty of it. You know, when we're in the throes of a season of Dark Side of the Ring, producing 10 documentaries in under a year, it's hard to get all the details right, you know, when you're moving that fast at the demands of television. It's you know, if we had you know, the ability to spend like a few months per episode uninterrupted, I'm sure we'd nail everything too. So it's tough, you know. But I do think I don't think that's a fair criticism. And look, he is the main character of the story. He is the person that without him, WCW wouldn't have reached the heights that it would have, you know? And I think that's a very key thing. It's like, we wouldn't even be sitting here talking about it if it weren't for Eric.
Yeah. Ooh. I thought that he came off very well in that. I mean, I thought that he admitted to his shortcomings and he was confident about the things that he did well. And not only that,
right,
it's the first time. Well, I don't know if it's the first time, but it's one of the first times you've seen Turner execs saying, no, Eric Bischoff was very, very good at what he did. And he had this vision, and it was the vision that we needed in order to make it a successful entity in that sense. And a lot of the things that he had claimed helped contribute to that demise for years, that a lot of people in wrestling are like, well, this is awfully convenient for you, got backed up by those executives, which I thought was interesting.
Totally. And just, I think the show, one thing that we did want to shed light on that I think is an underappreciated factor in this whole thing is two things, actually. One is, for anything to be successful on that scale, when you're working in a corporate environment or any sort of environment like that, you need somebody with a strong sense of passion and vision for what they want to do to go up against all of the forces that are constantly pushing against you. That's just a natural thing in production. You know, all of the gatekeepers and, you know, all the people who have the power to say yes or no, it's like, it's a constant battle of, you know, fighting for the right decisions, you know, all the time. And I think this series showcases that. But it also, I think, showcases Just the fact of what he was up against on a daily basis too, and in terms of not just the financial aspect of it, of money being moved around, having to produce a whole second show without a budget. I mean, I think about that. Like, if we had to produce, you know, this series out of the Dark Side budget, we would be impossible. So things like forces like that, that have nothing to do with booking, creative pushes, you know, talent. It all has to do just with the culture of the company that you're in. And so, I think he deserves a lot of credit for managing that. Was he always successful? No, but I mean, still, I think, you know, he did an incredible job, and it's a human portrait of someone who at least, you know, tried.
And on the Vince Russo element of things, am I a little biased because I've had some negative experiences with him? Yes, but I've also worked with Vince Russo. He and I had great chemistry on screen, but, you know, yeah. I ended up having very similar experiences to that of Eric Bischoff. Charming guy. Mm. Then when you get to experience him for any extended period of time, you find out a little bit more about him. He made plenty of headlines, and you had people like Shane Helms even calling him out because he said that he was better than 80% of the people in the company. I could not have disagreed with that more, but like,
he's a good heel promo, isn't he?
There you go. There are things that you hear in these interviews and you go, well, that's going to stir some people up like immediately. One you hear and you're like, oh, that's going to get people talking.
Oh, I remember exactly when he said it. I was on the other end of the camera, and I remember when he delivered that line, I was like, well, that's going to get some heat, you know, but for sure. You know, cause in his mind, he felt that the challenge of, and I can relate to this on a, not quite on the same scale, but you know, when you are part of a creative team and you are trying to execute something and you believe, you have a strong belief, strong vision in what you're doing creatively, it is hard to communicate sometimes, you know, your vision, and there is a knee jerk rather than delegating the creative, you feel, well, it might just be easier for me to go out and do it myself. And I think that was his mindset at the time, was, well, you want ratings? I'm going to go out there myself and get them because I know I can do what I want and what I'm looking for. But obviously the way in which he delivers that line in the show, I knew was going to get, you know, that was definitely going to be a heat seeker. And it sure was.
And I mean, there are so many bookers over the history of time that have done that have put titles on themselves and all that. Sure. However, they had on-screen experience and wrestling experience and were a little bit more believable to beat people like Ric Flair and the like. Another spot that I loved is when he goes, regarding David Arquette, 100% of the people were in on it. And then you cut to David Arquette and DDP both going, this is a terrible idea. We don't want to do this at all.
Yeah.
How often are you finding things that outright contradict one another? Like, what DDP and Arquette said, how they were like, this is a bad idea. No, we weren't for it. And then Russo saying what he said.
Well, to be fair to Russo, I think he is referring to like the writer's room, you know, like the people who have a sort of, you know, booking stake in.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Company.
And Bischoff did back him up on that. Bischoff did say that he was like, yeah, sure.
Yeah. And, you know, again, it's maybe it was the type of thing that seemed like a good idea at the time. You know, Arquette was a star. maybe it would get us some headlines. But again, I think Conan puts it quite eloquently, as he does in this entire series.
Yes.
He's kind of the voice of reason in a lot of places. But he talks about how, it was a short-term thing. You're sort of popping something in the short term, but it's not thinking about the long term. People's either recollections or opinions not lining up is something that happens a lot in this show or in any of the shows we do, but especially on the subject of WCW. One of the things I knew that would be interesting in terms of if we were to make this project, but I do think one of the underappreciated things also about the David Arquette thing that I gained a little bit more clarity on, which was, because I did not remember this, because back in when I was watching at this time, I just remember it happening. And just, him winning the title overshadowed everything. But the fact that he did give the belt the next day away, or maybe it was a week later or something, he gave the belt back.
He lost it like a week later. I think they were going to give it away, and then he didn't relinquish it. They defended it in like a cage match where it was another situation where the champion doesn't have to lose. And that was how they eventually did it. But I think that one of the big criticisms of that then was they had vacated the title like 7 or 8 times within a year at that point. So people were like, when he goes out to hand over the belt, they're like, again? Like, does this belt mean anything? Does this?
Right.
And it's so funny because I was waiting for the line because somebody in WCW always says it. They're like, well, we got on the cover of USA Today. And I'm like, yeah, so did OJ Simpson. Like, it's not always a good thing. ISIS has been on the cover of USA Today, and I'm not comparing those two things. I'm just saying it's not always a good thing to be on the cover of that.
And it doesn't usually ever really translate to.
Sure.
It can't. It's not a guarantee to translate to any sort of business, really, either.
Of course.
So, yeah.
Are there any upcoming projects or potential projects that you're like, man, I would love to do this with Vice. I would love to do this and really cast a light on it.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, there's definitely more Dark Side of the Ring episodes that we would love to do that we're actively looking into. There's other wrestling promotions in the past that I think, had not quite the same fate as WCW, but a similar fate where there is a lot of finger pointing and what happened. And, and I think like looking at the business side of certain promotions would be very cool to examine sort of off the heels of this show. Already we've gotten DMs, we've gotten text messages from people like, oh my God, ECW would be interesting to look at, TNA would be interesting to look at, and things like that. So
Lucha Underground would be nice to look at. Like there's no shortage, and the ability for you guys to get sort of information that's never been out there before has been really great.
Yeah, totally. And voices who've never, spoken on these types of subjects and stuff like that. So yeah, it would be awesome. It'd be awesome to just, to keep going. We always appreciate that. And it's cool to see that the show has been performing well and that the network is happy and everyone's happy. And so that's always a good thing because you never know, you never know.
Are you getting like any messages from whether it be wrestlers or people in the business that are like, I'd like to be interviewed for something in the future or wish I was interviewed for this of that ilk sort of?
Yes. It happens a lot. It happens a lot where we get not just even for this, for Dark Side and anything else, we do get the message of, oh, you should interview me. You should interview me. And there's actually a lot of people that I wish I could, and sometimes it comes down to the boring reason of just time and money. More so money, which does equal time, but it is this idea of like when we set out to do these projects, we only have a finite number of shooting days that we can, have. And so it's kind of a puzzle to try and fit all the pieces together to make sure you do get a well-rounded set of voices, that people can speak on enough that you can use throughout, in this case, all of the episodes. So that was challenging because honestly, if we were given a little bit more or we had more time or more money, man, I could think of about 12 more people, I'd probably, or probably more that I'd love to have, gotten on the record for this story. So, it's kind of a mixed blessing in that way because you can only go so far with what you have.
Have there been any episodes of Dark Side of the Ring that you guys have looked into doing and maybe you wanted to do and you're like, well, we can't for whatever reason, not because of fear of releasing it, but sometimes there's not enough people to talk on the record about things like that.
Yes. Yeah. I won't say which ones just because you never know. Someday they may become possible. But yeah, I mean, access is probably the hardest part of what we do. In terms of, getting access to certain stories. And when I say that, mostly not wrestlers, access to people who are kind of beyond the wrestling sure. industry that have to do with these stories. And, there's several that we've tried to do in earnest. I always tell people, you know, when I see the comments, from people suggesting episodes to us, when we ask people what they want to see and, or they send us DMs, you know, we've pretty much considered almost every single possible episode you could think of. So there's probably, if you haven't seen it already, there's probably a reason for it or another.
Yeah. I mean, I can tell you from experience, like it's 5 years after the Saudi plane ride and you still can't get people to talk about it, even though that regime of management is almost completely out of there at the top levels. Like there's just some things that people don't open up about. And fortunately, time does sort of heal that thing or heal things as well. But what are some things you would like people to know about who killed WCW if they haven't even tuned into one episode yet and they're looking to sort of catch up before this finale?
Well, yeah. So I think with this show, one thing we really tried to do is, and we do this with all of our shows, is we try to design, you know, Dark Side and also this show to be accessible to anyone. You know, we want to make these shows resonate with people who just want to hear a good story. And to us going into the Who Killed WCW series, it was important enough for us to highlight, you know, the pop cultural sort of, you know, phenomenal era of 90s wrestling when everything was popping off. And, the WCW is right at the center of that. And so we wanted to tell sort of the rise and fall of a pop culture phenomenon like WCW. But also, I also go back to this too. It's I'm working with a trainer trying to get, you know, in shape. And my trainer's younger than me. I think he's like in his late 20s. And I was telling him about the project. Yeah, we're doing this WCW documentary. He didn't know what it was because it predates his time. And I was like, have you ever seen that? You know, you ever heard of the NWO? You ever heard of that? And he was like, and then I showed him, you know, the logo. And he's like, oh, I've seen that shirt before. So he didn't know anything about what it is other than that it was a shirt, you know? Wow. So we always want to design our shows for that guy, you know, the person who may know, have seen that logo once in their life, but they want to see what the real story is behind that. So we're trying to make our shows as accessible as possible. To tell a really good human story. And I think there is one here, you know, somebody who, you know, took something, you know, that was less than, had a creative vision for it, which I find very inspiring, reinvent it, it becomes this phenomenon thing, but it's so hard to maintain that, you know, and just the individual decisions that certain people make just totally take this into a different course, you know, throughout time. So it's very interesting and very compelling. For episode 4, this was the hardest episode, I think, to put together for us because it's, you know, wrapping everything up. It's sort of getting towards a conclusion, if you will. And in terms of, you know, what happened on the last episode of Nitro ever and the sort of battle between Eric Bischoff and a financial partner to try and save the company. And of course, WWE's attempt to try and buy the company. And it's, you know, to me, I think it's very illuminating. I think for anybody who's jaded about, you know, hearing this story as many times as you think you have, I think episode 4 is going to feel the newest in terms of information, for you. And I have to quick shout out too, like this is a good display of that incredible footage that we were able to license this amazing, never before seen documentary footage shot by Scott so Lansing good. of capturing the last Nitro. A lot of that's on display here. So yeah, I mean, I'm really thrilled with how this episode came together and its conclusion. So I'll be very curious to see the reaction to it, later this week.
I love that. That added so much. Just seeing that and like like seeing Dustin Rhodes speak and like they are showing the physical rundowns, which is so funny because they still look the same today. Like I get from the rundowns and the formats are very similar today. So that is just so cool to see that end of things because there are so many documentaries that do have behind the scenes footage, but this is such a candid look.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a lot different when it's being filmed for something that you know is going to be released. But this, you could, he was just filming it. He was just like preserving that. It was so great. I really, really love this.
Yeah, it's really cool. And like what you were referencing is, you know, Dustin Rhodes is there for the last Nitro and he gets a copy of the format and he looks at it and he says, Vince McMahon vignette is going to open the show. And that's kind of like a, woo, you know, holy shit, who would have thought, you know, type of moment. So yeah, it's very cool. I mean, again, I think, I don't know. I don't think this show would have been as successful to me without that footage. I think getting that footage put this whole project over the top. So we're very much indebted to both Neil Pruitt and Scott Lansing for, you know, helping us to put this together so we could, you know, get this footage. And we really appreciate that because it makes us very special, I think.
Yeah, Neil Pruitt, the voice of the NWO. A lot of people don't realize.
That's right.
In that documentary, he was the guy who did the voiceovers for those original NWO vignettes. Well, Evan, thank you so much. I always look forward to talking to you. We finally made it happen a couple weeks ago, and now here we are for number two. We're going to be doing this again because I'm just so happy with how this came out. But tell the people where they can follow you and where they can kind of support what you do.
Absolutely. Well, me personally, I'm at Evan Husney on Instagram. And then you can follow the show on Instagram at Dark Side of the Ring or at Dark Side of Ring on X or Twitter, whatever they call it these days. And last episode is tomorrow as we're recording this, Tuesday at 10 p.m. on Vice TV. And that'll be it until, who knows, the next project.
Guys, thank you all so much. Please check it out. Until next time. We're out.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.